This is the Sports Radio 610 Outdoors Show with Captain Mickey Eastman.
Mickey broke the record at Camp Benny's on oysters, about however many you can eat.
Captain Mickey has been guiding the Texas Gulf Coast waters for over 40 years, and along with winning numerous national and local tournaments, Captain Mickey was recently inducted into the Saltwater Legends Hall of Fame.
Now, the reason I broke the record is I don't think I had enough money in my pocket to pay for all of them. Because if you break the record, everybody with you eats free.
Now, here's your host, Captain Mickey.
Good morning. Welcome to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show on this Thursday morning. I'm Captain Mickey Eastman producing the Outdoor Show. This morning is Jace, our sponsors today. The Belleville Meat Market, Allied Industrial Sales Incorporated, Boyd's One Stop, and Angler U. All right, looking at weather, it's 59 down on the island in Galveston this morning. And looks like today, plenty of sunshine, high of 67, north winds 10 to 20. And then for tonight, clear skies with a low of 57, west-northwest at 10 to 15. And for tomorrow, mainly sunny sky, high around 70, and north winds 10 to 15. It's a little warmer down on the coast, but inland, quite cool this morning. Feels really good. I'm liking it. It's about time. It's almost Thanksgiving, man. All right, looking at tides for today. You ready for this? We have one of them. We have a low coming up at 2:19 p.m. It's an 0.0 coming off a high last night of 1.6. 6:49 a.m. at sunrise, 5:22 p.m. sunset, and our moon phase, 72%. Right now, current conditions, looks like the Galveston North Jetty is kind of a north-northeast wind at 14, and it's north at 16 at Tiki Island. North at 9 at San Luis Pass, north at 9 at Eagle Point, and north at 9 at Morgan's Point. The old rollover side over there is showing a north wind at 11. So, and offshore it's 22 once you get off the coast. All right. Well, let's run over to Oyster Bio Hunting Club between Anahuac and Winnie over there along the Barrow Ranch, and let's check in with our good friend Brad McBride. Brad, good morning. What's up, buddy?
Good morning, Captain Mickey.
How you doing, man?
Oh, man, you know, living the dream.
That's it. Up and at them, ready to go get them ducks.
Yeah. I'm not at them today. I'm getting ready to go to the deer, or going to be getting ready to go to the deer lease here shortly.
Oh, you're gonna change horses then?
Yeah. It's a hard decision to make, especially with days like today.
Yeah, I know. Man, I bet hunting's good this morning.
Yeah, a lot of new birds showed up yesterday. I didn't hunt yesterday, but talking to the guys down there, they a lot of birds moving in the air, a lot of high ducks showing up and getting settled in. So today is probably going to be very interesting.
Awesome. Well, it's if no one's ever hunted Oyster Bio Hunting Club, they might want to book a hunt down there. It's my favorite place to hunt. You know, I grew up hunting all that east side over there where you guys are at, and man, I just love it over there.
Yeah, this y'all is
y'all do it right, no doubt about that.
This is June's 50th year. It's our 50th year anniversary.
50 years already? Man, I remember we were like Gene kids Jackson back then. This. Me and him and Blaine and Bobby and your dad, Burl.
Yep.
God rest his soul. Burl, I never met a person that didn't like Burl McBride. He was just a good old boy. You ought to be proud to have a dad like that. He was something else, man. Good man.
I got moved up into his pond this year, so it's been a good thing, but it's been a little difficult.
I understand, buddy. You're in Burl's pond. Cool.
Yeah, I'm in. I was originally Bob's pond, then when it moved to my dad's, and now I've gotten it. So awesome. And it's way back. You know, it's about a 5 mile buggy ride, and then you get in go to and go about another 2 miles into the marsh, from the top end of the marsh.
Yeah, you're back in there, man.
It's a good little trek, but it's nice. You know, all of our hunts are you wear knee boots or work good leather work boots if you got good weather. And you don't have to worry about sloshing through mud and water and all that crud.
No, you pull them right up the blind. They just step in.
That's something we pride ourselves on. Yeah, we pride ourselves on that. We do a lot of work around those blinds to keep them to where, you know, just you can wear your business clothes out there and make a little hunt and jump back in the car and get back home and get to work.
That's it. Get back to the office for a meeting at 10 o'clock.
Yep.
Nothing wrong with that, man. Well, how's y'all's hunting been going as far as, I know we've had all these warm temperatures and everything, but, you know, my buddy Wayne hunts down there with y'all a lot, and he said, you know, he's had some good shoots so far.
Yeah, it's been good. It's, you know, the warm weather comes with the higher tides, you know, south wind pumping in. That's been our biggest issue here lately, the high water in the marsh.
Right.
But up on the high ground, it's been really, really good. And even the marsh hunts are too, but they're little later shoots. You know, you get the first little 30, 45-minute flights, and then it's kind of an hour and a half-ish, two-hour lull sometimes, and then those birds start coming back out. It's been good, really good. You just had to wait a little bit. But, you know, having the refuge on three sides of us, and then us having about 1,500 acres in different spots to where give these ducks areas to rest.
Yeah,
let them hop back and forth, and that's how we do so well. It's those ducks moving up and down.
That's the key. Y'all got plenty of rest areas for those birds all around you,
where
they stage up and feel relaxed, and they want to make a flight to another roost. You guys are there waiting on them. Call them in and put them on a deck, baby.
it's nice. It's fun to watch. You know, getting to see those ducks move around and hop and do their thing, and as they start filtering, you know, coming in and out, that's when we do so well. Kind of got the flights figured out, you know, on different winds, but with the with the south wind, it's usually a little bit later hunts down in the marsh. Up in the higher ground, it stays pretty steady for now.
Yeah,
they're still pretty good.
Especially if you got water, no doubt.
Oh, yeah. And we got plenty of water.
What's your favorite wind at your blind?
Southeast. I'm looking almost due north. I know the other day when it rained so hard, you know, the wind was blowing out of the north. I felt like I needed goggles and a snorkel for the first couple hours. But as soon as it quit raining.
Like that, man.
as soon as it quit raining, it cleared up.
Yeah. When the faucet turns off, here they come, huh?
And that's what we told everybody. Hey, you know, it's going to sit on us for a little bit, but as soon as it stops, just hang in there with us. And and that's exactly what happened. 9:30-ish, I think, 9:45, it stopped, and we banged on them pretty hard and heavy for about an hour after that. And did really, really well.
You've been getting a pretty good mix of big ducks in with your teal every morning, or are they coming a little later or what?
We've been shooting a lot of big ducks, to be honest with you. A lot of gadwall, a lot of widgeon. The higher grounds have been getting their pintail most every day.
Right.
Still a lot of teal, a lot of blue wings. But I know down in the marsh, so we'll get an hour or so of teal, and then the big ducks will start working back. You know, we've been shooting it's kind of odd, but been shooting a lot of our fair share of redheads and canvasbacks down there, and that doesn't happen a lot.
You know, I hunted in Gene's Hole last year, we had seven big old canvasback drakes sitting on the water behind his blind. And, boy, they'd start swimming our way a little bit and thinking, all right, we're going to get us a big can. They never would come into range. Everybody wanted one apiece, you know. I'd love to have a
because
these are really pretty big ones, man. That make a beautiful mount.
Yeah, that open water down there, Gene's Old Pond, which Scott Parker's in that pond now, Gene's Old Pond and Bob's, they shoot them more than most of us because they're down right on the bow, you know, closer to the intercoastal, so they, you know, get a little bit more of those style. But we've seen them up on the north end up where Tim Wolford and them hunt, and Gene hunts now.
Yeah, that's where I saw different. Those seven last year was hunting with
Gene. Oh, yes. Oh, okay, yeah. That's a Cadillac hunt right there for sure.
Oh, man. What a sweet setup that is. Golly. You can't hunt that place in your house, Hughes.
You sure can. Yeah. Gene and Tim put a lot of time and effort into those blinds up there, and it shows.
Yeah, I've never got to hunt Tim's hole, but Wayne tells me it's a Cadillac, man. He's got it set up. It's unbelievable.
It's roughly the same setup with I think Tim has 800 decoys out up there.
Yeah.
Is where he's at. And they're strategically placed one by one.
Yep.
Yep. And it shows. I got to hunt with him. We had a big group come in, and we were going to split them last weekend. And we ended up talking and said, hey, let's just all let them go together, and you and I'll jump in together. And we ended up whacking them. We ended up with, I think, 45 out of 48 ducks. And we called, you know, we called the hunt at 9:30. Said, hey, let's get out here. Let's let them get back in here.
There you go.
So, really good hunt. Yep.
Really good hunt. Y'all do that a lot. There's no sense sitting out there for just two or three more birds and blowing your ducks out when they're wanting to come in there and sit down, you know, mid-morning.
No.
Might as well let them rest.
Try not to educate them. Get in there and shoot on them for a little bit. And then we get enough to where we're happy. Try to get a customer limit for sure. And then we'll start talking about, let's get out of here and let them get back in here and rest for a little while. That's something else we do. You know, after you come out of the ranch, you don't go back in the ranch unless you go through Gene and let him know, just to give all the birds the whole ranch to rest and move around and do their thing.
That's very wise. For anybody
it is paid over many years.
Hunt with you guys, just give them an idea on what, you know. I know most duck hunters shoot 12 gauge, some shoot 20s, but what shot selection, what size shot would you recommend for the type of shooting y'all are doing all around?
I would say this time of year it would be 2s and 4s, you know, 2 3/4 or 3-inch 2s and 4s. If you know the weather's going to be a little nasty, you're going to hunt up on the high ground or something, you know, and you want to take some BBs for later in the morning. But most of our shots are all within, you know, 45 yards. My pond is only 58 yards across.
Right.
And most of the decoys in most places are not but a 40-yard shot at the most.
Right.
And we're not going to shoot much high. I mean, much higher than that. We don't play that game down there. We're not a sky buster.
No sky
buster.
We want
them right.
That's it.
Yeah. We want them right. If they're not right, I'm not going to call a shot, or we're not going to call a shot. And sometimes it hurts you, sometimes it helps you, you know, but that's just something we do. We pride ourselves on getting them right.
Right.
And that's the safe way to do it, too, out in front of you, decoying birds.
Yes.
No gun for no stuff, moving around.
A lot less cripples.
Absolutely.
Good kill
Absolutely.
Shots. You bet you, man. Well, hey, look, Brad, if somebody wants to get with you about coming down and hunting, I highly recommend it. I know y'all's operation, and it's first class all the way. Give them a number so somebody can reach you if they want to get down and book some hunts, do some serious duck hunting.
We've got the lodge and everything. They want to stay overnight. But they can call me at 281-543-4699, or they can call the lodge, which Gene Campbell will most of the time answer that. It's 409-252-3254.
All right, buddy. Well, Brad, I appreciate the report and update from the east side this morning. And, hey, have a good deer hunt.
Yes, sir.
Hope you get what you're looking for, buddy.
Oh, well, yeah. Getting out in the woods is the best part.
Yes, sir. All right, Brad. Always good talking to you, man. You take care, bud.
Thank you.
Later. All right. That's Brad McBride down at Oyster Bio Hunting Club. Great bunch of guys down there. They know what they're doing. All right, well, I need to take a moment to tell everybody about the Belleville Meat Market. They know what they're doing also. This is the best meat market I've ever used. Their processing facility is second to none, nothing like it. They have a full menu of pecan smoked barbecue. They serve that Monday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. And on their menu, they have pecan smoked pulled pork and homemade hot dogs. Bulk pricing is available on their fresh ground beef and all their pecan smoked sausage and their original country hot dogs. Right now, you can buy two packs and get the third pack free. And if you're looking to have a quarter calf or a half calf process, that's available for pre-order also. And their wild game processing, just in time for deer season, their new sausage recipe, it is available. You got to try it. It's really good. And along with that, get you some deer tamales made and venison hot dogs. Your family will love that you did. And they're now taking orders for their country smoked turkeys. That's 11 to 13-pound average weight bird. Limited supply, so get them while you can. That's the Belleville Meat Market, where meat is our middle name. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. 418 here in the Bayou City. Now let's run up to Lake Conroe and let's strike up a conversation with the fish dude. He's never lost for words. Richard, what's up, buddy?
Not a lot, Mickey. How you doing this morning?
Oh, man, I'm hanging out, brother. It's all good.
I bet it's a little chilly up your way, man. I went a little west, so it's really chilly. Yeah, it's down in the 30s.
You're out west. You went to your dad's, huh?
Yep. I had to get out here.
You lucky dog.
I had a trip yesterday, and that wind was blowing so much, so we decided to reschedule it, and then it's one of them things where it's like, man, I ain't gonna just sit around here. So come on over here to Lano and see what's going on, get everything kind of situated, got all the grandkids and stuff gonna come up this weekend,
that'll be fun.
Yeah, buddy. So we're gonna have a place full of kids and grandkids and all kinds of stuff. So get them out here and get them hunting or get them in the deer stand anyway. And they'll be hunting now. There ain't no telling what they'll be hunting, bugs and all kinds of stuff. But just getting them out in it, and that's the main thing. So it's all good. And just checking cameras and stuff like that yesterday. So it's got plenty of dang pigs, that's for sure. So that's one of them things.
I'm hearing that from everybody, man. Just when the pig problems act like they're fading away, they don't. You can't wipe them out.
I tell people all the time they're worse than cockroaches, in my opinion.
They are.
You can't get rid of them. I mean,
well, they throw almost 4 litters a year.
Yeah, and they'll do like 12 to 18 at a time.
I'm telling you, man, they drop them. It's like fish, man.
I guarantee you, it's crazy, but the thing about these out here in Central Texas, though, these for the most part, these are some of the best tasting pigs you can get. Now, them East Texas ones, boy, you get them eating them old wet pine roots and stuff like that, and they get kind of bad smelling and tasting and all kinds of stuff, but. Yeah, get the right ones over there. They're all right, but man, you can't eat a big old boar hog over there. I mean, he's just as nasty as he can be. These over here, though, they're not quite so bad. They don't smell, you know, like those do or anything like that. So I usually try to get a couple of them and make some sausage out of them. It turns out pretty dang good. So I have no complaints with that part of it. But last week, you remember I was talking about. I guess it's Saturday. I was talking about. I think the shad size made a difference on them hybrids, and I think that's what's happening. I mean, it got out there and caught those shad off the river, those bigger gizzard shad, and we pulled up out there and had. I can't remember exactly how many we kept. I think we had 5 or 6 that we kept. And had a whole fistful of them that just pulled off on us. So I don't know if it's the don't know if it's a sad shad size, but I'm kind of convinced that that's probably what it is because it's.
Well, you said that morning. That's why you were getting those bigger shad. You think you needed a bigger target for them.
And that's, you know, I'm really confident that's what's going on because I'm drawing more bites anyway. I may not be catching more fish, but I'm drawing more bites, and that's a good indicator. That's probably what's happening. So that's, you know, I'd try everything under the sun because you know me. I'm just not going to give up on them no matter what. Especially with those hybrids, I always try to jump the gun on them. They usually don't start till after Thanksgiving where they get consistent, but I always have to try them. No matter what, I got to give them a shot and try to stay on top of them and get them rascals a bite earlier and earlier every year. But it always amounts to the water temperature no matter what. And this year, that water temperature has just held itself up, but it's not coming down. But after that wind blowing yesterday, hopefully that kind of gets everything going in the downward direction.
You bet.
Yeah, that's what
a good drop.
And that's, you know, that's one of the main things. Get that water temperature cooled down and stuff like that, and get those fish to feeding up. And that, you know, that's what always amazed me, though. I get people that call me, you know, the fish don't bite in the wintertime, do they? They eat all the time. I mean, the rascals, they got to eat no matter what. But, and sometimes, like with the hybrids, for example, those rascals are just way more aggressive. I mean, they when that water temperature cools down, it's like they just get a big, giant burst of energy and just want to eat more and more and more. Even on your really bad, cold, miserable days out there, that's when they want to eat the best, you know. Now, this, you get out there on those real pretty days, sometimes they don't want to act right. You know, that's more for fishermen instead of the fish. You know, they, I don't know why that is, that you can get out there on one of the most gorgeous days there is, and you can't hardly get the fish to bite. But you get out there on a nasty day, it's kind of, you know, I used to hear it duck hunting all the time. You get on one of them nasty, miserable, cloudy, windy days, the ducks fly more. That's not really my kind of day to go hunting. But I tell you what, when it comes to fishing, them rascals, they love it. They love that bad weather for some reason.
I think about all of, you know, the big fish I've caught over the years, and they've been in very adverse conditions, you know.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, just
terrible
just
weather. It gets them big fish moving, man. They move.
It does. And then it's normally always cooler, too. You know, that's the thing, because the cooler weather typically, you know, they're just feeding up. You know, now granted, I know the saltwater fish are a little bit different. You know, the flounder, for example, well, they spawn November, December.
This is when they stage up to move to the Gulf to spawn. They climb.
Oh, okay.
I think, you know, up my way, I think we have resident flounder that never leave. But
probably right.
Lower bays, they do. They'll do the Gulf, you know, the exit into the Gulf, but they've got all these staging areas with deep water access and currents that they need to ride that tide outwards. And it hopefully we can, you know, we're all enjoying this cold weather, but we don't want it to get too cold too quick, because flounder season will open back up on the 15th of December, and hopefully all these flounder enthusiasts, they can get their licks in.
They
all leave.
I'll tell you what, I wanted to get out there and try to catch me some of them rascals, but that's one thing I didn't know how the season ran anymore, as far as when they closed it down and stuff like that.
Down, you know, for the, so a lot of them can get out of here and spawn and reproduce, all that stuff. And
Right, you know, and some of it maybe, I mean, I don't know. Every time I get a shrimp off of a boat out there, they usually have a bunch of little bitty flounder in them, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it never fails. You'll get a bucket of shrimp or whatever, and then, you know, he's coming straight off the boat, and he's got a little bitty flounder in there, I've always seen it every time I've done that. So it's just one of them things.
I don't know. Catch, that's just part of the game, man.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is, you know. I mean, it is what it is. You know, you can't hardly stop it when you're running the net.
Well,
you know,
there's just a tenth of the shrimpers that there used to be. That's not a big issue anymore, bycatch kills.
Yeah, there used to be a bunch of them, that's for sure.
Boy, everybody liked to blame the shrimpers for the fish declination, you know, for the decline.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what.
Well, they went after the netters first, and that didn't work.
Yeah.
And they went after the shrimpers, and that didn't work. Now they're after us, and it's still not working. It's called habitat loss and environmental issues.
That's it. That's like those oyster reefs and stuff, those guys commercially fishing for those oysters and stuff. And now, granted, I know they're trying to make it more sustainable, where they're creating more reefs and stuff like that. But you still got the ones that don't, you know, they're just out there after the money. They don't care about sustainability.
Well, those oyster businesses, the real ones, they take care of these reefs.
Because that's their future.
They're grooming them and transplanting and doing their due diligence. They have to. That's the way they make their living. It's like us trying to protect our fish populations to make our living.
And, that's exactly right.
When the deck stacked against you, I mean, you had Hurricane Ike. That was a big decimation of our oyster beds. And then you had 9 straight years of severe flooding. And especially Harvey, that was the nail in the coffin flood in my book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's, you know, all that fresh water. Thousands of years to make. It's, it was destroyed in about a 5 to 10 year period. Just boom.
Yep.
It's going to take time to get it back.
Oh, yeah. It's going to take twice as long to get it back as it took knock it out. There ain't no doubt about that.
And that's if salinity levels and conditions stay, you know, proper.
Optimal. That's the thing right there. And that's a big if, you know. I mean, that's what I tell people all the time. They talk about, if the worms had machine guns, the birds wouldn't mess with them either. But,
well, if ands and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a Merry Christmas.
There you go. There ain't no doubt about it. But it's one of them things. But, you know, hopefully everything works out for everybody. I mean, eventually it's all going to smooth itself out anyway. There just may be a transfer of different habitat in certain different places, you know, that may be all it amounts to. Just kind of everything move, you know, because sure. just like the beach erosion and stuff like that that goes on, and you know, what once was 100 yards off the beach is now in the water, you know.
Right.
So it's everything just kind of changes over the years. So it's one of those things, and you know, this just like Conroe, that's one thing about it. You know, people don't think about it, but there is still quite a bit of erosion that happens up there on a lot of the things, you know, especially
up north where there's no bulkheads.
Well, believe it or not, a lot of it's on the south end. You've got Bird Island over there since the inception of these wake boats, you know, and I don't want to just pick on them, but
on waves, man, because it's detrimental to islands and things like that. We've seen that down here with ship wakes. From the busy channel.
Those dang wake boats get out there and throw such a big wake. Like Bird Island, for example. I think Ever Lake's got a Bird Island, but Bird Island right there by the lighthouse on Conroe, which is right dead on the south end of it. That thing has started eroding like at twice the rate it was eroding prior to the inception of these wake boats. You know, say 10 years ago, it was eroding them maybe at 6 inches a year. Now it's eroding about a foot a year. Now they've got a group out there trying to bulkhead it to prevent that from happening. But, you know, is it too little too late? Who knows? You know, and it's an island that's just, that's maybe all it amounts to is just a Band-Aid, you know, because during the droughts and stuff like that, whenever the lake goes down, and this is what people don't think about, when the lakes go down and get below those bulkheads, once it starts to rain, the water washes behind the bulkhead first, and it creates voids in there. And as it comes up, it tends to take out the backside of the bulkheads, which knocks them out, you know, and that's the waves don't help that at all either. But, you know, you've got the natural waves from the wind that happens, but that's just one of those things, you know. A hurricane can really decimate a bulkhead, like after Harvey, for example. I mean, we had some pretty high winds on the lake, and it took out several bulkheads on the lake. I mean, you'd have one like a house sitting on a point. The north side would be washed out, and then the south side would be washed out also, from where you'd have those waves bouncing off of a bulkhead and coming back, and then the waves coming in from the wind direction. So it's kind of a no-win situation in a hurricane situation, but for the most part, you don't have those all the time, like a constant wave from a boat, you know. Now granted, you know, the bass boats, the bay boats, and all these other boats, they make waves, but they're not designed to throw that big giant thing out there.
Right.
You know, when you're talking about just intentionally rolling a 2.5 to 3 foot wave out there, that can be a problem, you know.
It's constant and consistent like that, it just withers things away. It really does.
Exactly. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's just going to happen no matter what. There's just nothing you can do about it. But it's one of those deals where, you know, everybody's going to do their thing, and And there's, you know, there's a place up there they call the Party Cove, and people run up in there in them big old wake boats. And there's actually a Facebook page like Conroe Party Cove, and that is one of the worst places to have a party cove, like they call it, because it is so full of stumps. I mean, that is one of the stumpiest places on the lake, and they go to running up in there. But you know, it creates a lot of fiberglass repair. That's one thing about that particular cove is there's lots of issues with hitting stumps in there.
Fiberglass repair, lower unit repair.
Exactly.
Transom repair.
I guarantee you. Hey,
let me knock this break out, Richard. I'll come right back at you. Hang on, buddy.
Okay.
I'll be right back to you.
Yes, sir.
Well, folks, if you need pipe, valves, fittings, instrumentation, fasteners, or gaskets, and you need them fast, look no further than Allied Industrial Sales Incorporated. They're your one-stop shop for all of your petrochemical supply needs with a full fleet of delivery trucks and same-day delivery. There's no need to wait weeks for other distributors. Let Allied deliver today. And if you're looking for that hard-to-find item or can't wait on long deliveries, their sales team has over 100 years of combined experience, and they're here to support you from start to finish, whether it's a 24/7 maintenance project or ground-up construction. Allied has you covered. Remember, the first three letters of Allied are all, and that's exactly what they do. Call Allied Industrial Sales Incorporated. Let them handle it all for you at 281-332-6224 or sales at alliedinc.com. Spell out Inc. That's 281-332-6224. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. All right, 440 here in the Bayou City. Okay, Richard, we're back, my friend.
All right, Mickey, I'll tell you what. Just finished off that Party Cove deal years ago before we had spotlock trolling motors and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I had a couple of stumps in there where I catfished all the time. I mean, I'd had one I called the Peace Tree because it had a fork in the top like he was holding up a peace sign, right? So in that
peace tree,
yeah, that's what I called it. And it's finally that thing broke off and fell over, but I'd always tied to that same old stump. And I set it in there because I knew those ski boats and everything were going to be over to the side over there out of the stump field for the most part.
Right.
But I'd be like 100, 150 yards inside this stump field. And when I mean a stump field, I'm talking about a stump every 10 feet. You could barely get your boat to squeeze in there, right, without bouncing off of a few of them, and a lot of times you did. But I'd be sitting there catfishing, and here comes a boat pulling a skier within 10 yards of me. I'm going, dang, they just don't realize what's here. And about that time, the boat will hit a stump. Well, they stop, and when they set their skier down on the stump for the most part, I mean, they didn't think about that. It's like, good night, you're going to get somebody killed in here, doing that stuff like that. But it's, you see some crazy stuff out there on the water. I know you've seen plenty over the years, and I know I have for a lot, I mean, that's one of the crazy things, but just as many times as I almost get hit by boats for the most part, it's sitting out there in the middle of nothing because they don't pay attention. They're looking at their skier or whatever. Now, with that said, I have almost gotten hit by a bass boat a couple of times, and it's because everybody's putting them big screens up there on their console now, looking at 2 and 3 depth finders up there on their console, and they can't even see over the top of them. So that's another thing here that's been an issue for the past couple of years. It's hard to believe that, but I mean, they'll put those 12, 16 inch screens right there on their in their face, and they're great for when you're looking for a fish, but when you're running, man, you can't hardly see nothing for a lot of times. And I can't say nothing because I'm going to have my next one's going to be that way where I've got those screens up there like that, because those electronics are so beneficial when it comes to bass fishing and just fishing in general. You learn a lot about the bottom contours and things like that. A lot of people wonder why you need them. Well, if I got one that I can run side image exclusively on, one I can run down scan on exclusively, and then one with just a contour map on, exclusively. I can zoom in on each one of them as I see something that piques my interest, you know, whether it be on a side image and going across there looking at a channel swing or something like that with fish on it, or even a, you know, like there's so many sunk structures down there. You know, you've got, whether it be boats, boat lifts, cars. I mean, there's a, like at the Highway 19 bridge over there on at the Trinity River. I mean, I went through there one day because I was backing off the trailer and my motor died. I'm going, what the heck? And it was like the Monday after Mother's Day. And I backed off there again, boom, hit it again. I go, what the heck? And so I raised my motor and got off the trailer. Went out and parked my truck, and I went to go catch bait, and I thought it was just a log that was floating. You know, I'm out there at 3 o'clock in the morning, and so I said, "No, that ain't right." So I went by and side imaged it. Well, it was a truck. There was a truck with a trailer in the boat ramp at Highway 19.
What?
Exactly. The Highway 19 boat ramp actually drops straight into the river channel. So you got the ramp itself and then just a sheer 40-foot drop. Well, what happened was the front tires had hung up on the ramp with the trailer and the truck, the rear end, pointed straight down. So I was hitting this front bumper every time I was trying to back off the trailer.
Oh, boy.
And I called it in. And I said, hey, you know, there's a truck in the water over here. It says, I need somebody, you know, let somebody, oh, well, we knew about that. It went in yesterday. They just didn't have time to go get it out. And I was sitting there going, well, dang it. You know, I mean, put something up there, letting somebody know. And about that time, a deputy pulled up. And I said, man, get in there and look at this. And I loaded him up in the boat and went over there. And sure enough, I said, there's a truck right there. You can see it hanging straight down. It's like, good night. And he says, yep, sure is. And since then, I got to looking around. There's like five of them in the water over there. And every once in a while, they do go down there and they'll hook onto them and do like swift water rescue type scenarios and stuff like that, and go hook onto those trucks and pull them out, get their dive team out there and try to pull them out occasionally. But last time I checked, there was five of them just right there at the end of that ramp in the bottom of the Trinity River. So it's, man, like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, most of them are just straight up cars that are down there, cars or trucks. Or I don't know if they steal them and drive them off the end of the ramp or what they do with them, but. But they do.
Well,
they
I've done
do
a lot in my day, but I've never put a truck in the water. Not at the boat ramp.
And knock on wood, I haven't either. I've seen several of them go in, but now, you know, that's one of my biggest fears is always doing that, because, you know, you get in a hurry sometimes and step out. But and I've seen people do it. Well, I mean, they'll step right out, or like one of the last ones that's got had a one ton truck. You know, it was a work truck. He had a weld machine on the back, and he's back in his pond, or had his pontoon boat. He was loading up, and I think it was a standard at that. And he, I think it was shut off even, and he had in gear at the ramp, and he hit that trailer with that pontoon boat, and it popped it out of gear. And I'm sitting there cleaning fish, and I look over at him. He's got that pontoon boat just a revved up push, and I go, what in the heck's he doing? About the time I see that truck start to roll back inch by inch, I go,
it still wouldn't hold that truck out of the water with him.
It wouldn't hold him out.
Oh,
no.
Man.
So, and he, you know, and so finally,
see,
it
he should have bought
going.
A bigger motor.
That's it. There ain't no
can't
doubt.
Ever have too much power, brother.
No, sir. I promise you. I'll tell you what, boy, when it comes to pushing on them trucks.
Hey, we put in so many suspect ramps and, you know, hole in the walls that, hey, we pushed our trucks out of that ramp a million times with that outboard.
I guarantee you I have. There ain't no doubt. Get somebody in the truck going and
that's
then you're
it.
Pushing on the motor.
Push it out, baby.
And then sketchy at that. You're just thinking, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get it all the way out.
Yeah.
It's,
that's four-wheel drive and everything, and you're still pushing it out with the engine.
I guarantee you. Boy, I tell you what, that's something else when you get into those spots. So I used to love doing that, though. I mean, that's like I've had my bass boats in ponds, you know. There ain't no doubt. It's just it's one of them things, just dump them in a pond. And, you know, people think, man, how do you do that without a ramp? Well, just dump it in there, put it in four-wheel drive, and go. I mean, you can get it out. That's one of the things. Those ponds, I've dumped them in so dang many ponds, it's unreal. All you got to do is ask Fred Adams. He'll tell you. I've had them up in his pond before. So,
is that right?
I've had my Pathfinder in one of his ponds. So it's a 24 foot bay boat in the middle of about a 2 acre pond. So
boy.
I guarantee you, I've had all mine in some places,
and the old dancing.
It's still going. There ain't no doubt. It's one of them things. It's, you know, you get them in there. You get people that are curious. You know, hey, what's in the bottom of this thing? And I got all the technology on the boat, so let's dump it in there and see. So we can go in there and take a look at all of it. And that's one of the things about the electronics is anymore you don't have to know what's down there. You can find out what's down there. You know, because it's all the side, like I say, side imaging. And even with the forward-facing sonar, I mean, the forward-facing sonar is great for certain things, and so is the side image, and so is the downscan. I mean, it's all, then you just got so many different aspects to it. You like the 360 that Hummingbird's got out there. I've never used it, but because I always thought that would melt my brain down, too much information coming out. You know,
that's what Brian Barrera uses down there in South Padre. He's into the Hummingbirds big time.
Yeah, that 360 stuff, I'll tell you what, it's just, when you start thinking about it, I mean, that is a lot of information to kind of absorb, you know, as you're going across, even though you're on the trolling motor when you're using it, you're looking at everything completely around your boat, whether it's a log laying there or a fish out there, you know, he may be 50, 80 feet away from you, and he may be under your boat, you know, I mean, you're sitting there scratching your head going, okay, and like I say, But whenever they first come out with the side imaging and stuff, I thought, man, that's just going to be way too much. And because I get to where I keep it on four screens. I've got my traditional 2D sonar. I've got my 3D downscan. I've got my chart up. And then I'll run side imaging also on a block of four different screens on my depth finders. That way I can see it all. You know, the problem is it minimizes the amount of screen you've got. That's why I was talking about a while ago, having the
my head swim.
I know.
I'm an old bay rat, man.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. But you know, the thing is, what out of all that stuff, just going fishing is just as good most of the time.
Our fishing has become down here in Galveston Bay, it's more of a structure related kind of nook and cranny fishing now. We don't have those vast numbers of fish where our bay is full of fish, and you have to keep targeting these areas, and boy, it would with electronics like that would help you tremendously.
You're basically bass fishing,
trolling motor and in on like that, like you're talking about.
Yep, that's the thing right there. And that's, you know, as your habitat changes for them and they're the way they reposition and relocate, a lot of times that's how it really helps you out a lot, you know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like I say, the old school, this looks fishy type area sometimes works out better than using all that electronics. So it's, you know, you can't ever forget that. And that's what I keep catching myself going back to, using the forward-facing sonar. Now, granted, in the tournament stuff, a lot of these youngsters are winning using forward-facing and stuff like that. But still, that knack for knowing this is where I need to go and do this different type of stuff, and watching your surroundings, the birds, the bait, the, you know, different things like that you hands down, you can't beat it no matter what, because so many people, they're not going to focus on those
depth finders. Now, are these HDS units, a lot of people that, you know, are they compatible to use forward facing and things like that?
Yes. The HDS and the carbon units are, and then they've got the dang it, I can't remember off the top of my head. Can't remember the other one. It's a lot.
Lasco.
It's the one they've got specifically for the active target, and it's the latest version. I haven't been keeping up with it, but I use the HDS units, and what it has to have in order to run it is a dual processor. So basically it's a computer, right? So you got the carbons of the dual have the dual processor, the HDS units have the dual processor, but stuff like all the older versions I can't even remember, not the HDS units, but the, I got two or three of them at the house. I can't even remember what they are, but they're only a single processor in the unit for your computerized part of it. And with that single processor, it won't run them. So do you always, because a lot of people ask that same question, the carbons will run them, you know, and the carbons don't look bad. I love using the HDS units because they've got like the HDS 12, for example. And I, you know, Ray Marine is another one. Ray Marine has got like a glass screen instead of having a polymer or a plastic type screen on them. And that, I like that clarity that glass gives you over like a carbon unit. It's got that polymer or that plastic type screen on it. So you get a clearer vision, a sharper image out of it.
Right.
So that's why I like using HDSs myself. But with that said, I see a lot of people that get them broken. They'll hit them with a weight and they'll crack them. So knock on wood, I've not done that yet, but it's, I know my day's coming. You know, somebody's gonna flop a big old half ounce weight up there, jig, or something, and hit it. You know, so it's inevitable. It's going to happen, but they do have screen protectors for them. So eventually I'm going to have to break down and do that. But I just, you know, with me, I'm too hard headed sometimes. I got to wait till something detrimental happens for me to make up my mind. I need to go ahead and do it. But it's, so far so good, but it's, you know, like the forward facing stuff. I mean, I enjoy using it, but when I get people on the boat a lot of times and tell them, hey, this is what this is. This is how you use it. Cause I'll sit in the back of the boat with my remote control on the trolling motor and let them go fish up there in the front. And if they choose to look at it, they choose to look at it. Like a good example, a few years ago after I first got it, I had some youngsters out there. I say they're youngsters, 12, 14 years old, something like that. And we were going along some riprap rock. And I told them, just throw them spinnerbaits. It's in the spring. I said, throw them spinnerbaits down the edge of these rocks. You'll catch some fish. And we're going along there. And I'm sitting in the back just running a motor. And they go, there ain't no fish up here. I said, let me get up there and see. So I got up there and looked at that screen. I said, yeah, there is, it right there. And I threw my spinnerbait out. And I said, watch it sink down to them. And it starts sinking down there. And I said, now it's about the right depth. So I start reeling, and I reel it kind of slow. I said, you see it coming in? See, I'm getting closer to that fish. Watch what he does when I get there to him. As it got to him, boom, he gets it and jerk him in the boat. And I said, see, there you go. That's all you got to do. And they said, well, we was reeling too fast. I said, that's what that same thing tells you, is that you're either going too fast, too slow, you're totally missing them. I mean, yeah, that's one advantage.
Just right, that's the strike zone, man.
That's what it takes.
Well, I got a roll, my friend. Yeah, fun down at your dad's, and live it up. Live big, live large, man.
Yeah, absolutely, brother, absolutely. Well, anyone can get in touch with me at 936-661-7920. You can find me on Facebook. Just check out the Fish Dudes Guide Service. You can email me at admin@fishdudetx.com, or just check out the webpage, fishdudetx.com.
You got it, my friend. Richard, I'll talk to you down the road. You have a good one, brother.
Yes, sir. Y'all have fun.
Thank you. See you.
All right.
It's time for our top of the hour break. You're listening to the Outdoor Show here at Sports Radio 610. We'll be right back.